I'm Brandi Cruz coming up today on Undivided. We broke the news last night. Seattle's socialist mayor making the decision to oust the city's police chief. However, she may be considering a change of course today. Plus, an actual punishment for the co-owner of the Seattle Storm after she berated two young girls. And local businesses plaster a sex offender's face all over their storefronts and ban him from entry. Love to see it. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our independent show for just $5 a month. Supporters are what makes this show possible. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A ton of breaking, developing news to get to. So I broke the news last night. I think it was around 9:30 p.m. I'd been hearing rumors all day. I was finally able to reach some sources and confirm that indeed, Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson informed Police Chief Sean Barnes that his services were no longer required as the chief of police in the city of Seattle. This is what I posted. Sources tell me Seattle Police Chief Sean Barnes will be out as Seattle Police Chief as early as tomorrow. Mayor Katie Wilson is not confirmed, but he's been told to resign or be fired. And I said I was getting a flurry of messages from officers who say Seattle City Hall is in absolute rudderless chaos, which of course it is, and it has been. And that's what happens when you put a woman child in charge of a city who's never had a real job, and she's floundering. She's absolutely floundering. Now, let's be clear about one thing. My police sources are impeccable. They always have been. I think I've broke news of every police chief's exit for the last like four or five police chiefs. So I am 100% certain, based on my well-placed sources, that Chief Barnes was packing up his office and that he was told that basically he had a decision to resign or to be fired. And he wasn't going to make it easy. And so he was going to make her today actually come out and fire him. That's not in dispute. The reason I'm saying that is because there is now a question as to whether Seattle's mayor is going to change her mind under pressure from members of the Black community. So the news comes out, I break this around 9:30 p.m., and then other outlets came out and broke the same news that Chief Barnes was on his way out. This is after a disastrous PR response to the mass shooting on Sunday at Bite of Seattle. He was out of town, which I've said he can't predict shootings, but he has refused to answer directly how often he's out of town because this has become a pattern. He has a home still in the Chicago area, and that's a problem. He can't be the police chief of a major city and still be out of town all the time. And then, of course, he got into that verbal, aggressive confrontation with a reporter. So the mayor, and I had called on her, not that she probably watches the show, or maybe she rage watches the show, but said, look, you want to show some leadership? Fired the chief of police, especially after what he did to that reporter. Let's say she watches the show, and that was 100% us. So anyway, the decision was made overnight. And again, I have it on very good authority. It's not in question at all. The decision was made that he was going to leave. And then this morning at 8 a.m., Black Seattle leaders show up to Seattle City Hall and hold a rally encouraging the mayor to change her mind.
He's done a great job in a short amount of time. We can argue things that he could have done better. All of us, and whatever we do, we could do better. And so we need to understand that this African-American, this Black and brown community is absolutely behind Chief Barnes, and we are a strong constituency. And we want the mayor to know that you need to reckon with us. You need our support. You need our help. But you can't keep X-ing out our leaders like they don't matter.
You can't keep X-ing out our leaders like they don't matter. And I don't know if they're talking about former Mayor Bruce Harrell, who the Black community leaders supported. I mean, she didn't really X him out. She kind of beat him in a election. You know, that's how things still work here. A second Black leader put it more bluntly, saying, Katie Wilson hates Black people.
This mayor has had a problem with Blacks. The problem being she doesn't hire any Blacks. She had no Blacks in her campaign. She had no Blacks in 14 years of organizing.
So their argument is she's white, he's Black, she can't fire him, essentially. That, you know, he's not perfect, but he's Black. That's essentially the message that they showed up at Seattle City Hall to state this morning. I just feel the need to show you this image. because they're complaining she doesn't hire enough Black people and there's not enough Black leadership. This is a picture of the leadership of the Seattle Police Department. Keep in mind that Seattle is 60% white, 6% Black. And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 people on command staff. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the 11. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the 11. So more than half are Black. And the rest are women, except one white guy. One lonely white man. Now, look, I'm all for the very best person for the job should get the job. But what is the statistical likelihood that in a city that's 6% Black, that roughly 50 to 60% of your Seattle Police Department's command staff would be Black if you're picking the very best people for the job? And then you have the Black community complaining that that's not enough, that there's not enough Black representation in leadership. And it's not just the Seattle Police Department. The top three public safety officials for Seattle and King County are Black. The chief of police, Sean Barnes, Patty Cole Tyndall, the King County Sheriff, and Harold Scoggins, the Seattle Fire Chief. So it just is a ridiculous argument that there's not enough representation of the Black community in Seattle leadership, and particularly in public safety leadership. So that's stupid. So they go up this morning. This all started at 8 a.m. They were there, ready. They said, and they even confirmed it. One of the Black leaders was saying that he'd spoke to Sean Barnes, and Sean Barnes wasn't happy with, like, his severance package. And so Sean Barnes was texting people last night. I saw one of the text messages that he had been fired by the mayor. So Sean Barnes was absolutely fired yesterday. Had it been officially on the books, you know, I don't think they gave him his paperwork, but he even started cleaning out his office, okay? And so then the Black leaders show up at Seattle City Hall. They go up. They have a meeting with Katie Wilson, who I'm sure felt an immense amount of white guilt. They came down. They met with the media again. And here's what they said after the meeting.
We want to say thank you to the mayor for giving us an audience. It was a very productive exchange. Certainly, we will not divulge any of the conversation, but we had implored and admonished the mayor to reconsider her decisions, and we can only hope that she will have heard the voices of these astute and amazing individuals behind me to reverse this decision, but we won't divulge anything that was said. It was very productive, very excellent, very dynamic, and we stated our case very clearly, very articulately, why Chief Sean Barnes should still be the chief of the city of Seattle.
And they sounded very optimistic. And look, Katie Wilson is an ideologue, and she is very sensitive to the fact that the Black community didn't want her to get the job. The Black community has sort of this outsized influence in the city of Seattle. And so I think it's very possible that she feels bullied into now reversing course. And I can't even begin to tell you how weak that would make her look. She already looks totally listless and incompetent. I mean, Katie Wilson has to go. She really does have to go. It's not just embarrassing, it's dangerous. And that's the important thing to realize, is when you have incompetence, people can die. And people do die. I mean, how many days did it take after the mass shooting for them to let the public know that there's very likely a third shooter still at large? And we don't know anything about what he looks like. So when you have incompetence, an inability to make quick decisions, an inability to make important decisions and to stick to them, you have a city in absolute chaos. And this would be, she's already the weakest mayor in America, but maybe the weakest mayor. I mean, honestly, at this point, I'd take the alleged sex predator back. I am not kidding. I would take Ed Murray, the alleged sex predator. Nicole's laughing, but I'm serious. Because at this point, like, and those are allegations against Ed Murray that, like, dated back decades. And I know some people will think that's awful for me saying that. But Seattle's a big city. Seattle has a lot of problems. And God forbid there's, like, a terror attack or something. I mean, this is a really dangerous situation to be in. Again, we have a woman child on the seventh floor of City Hall who can't make a decision to save her life and is possibly easily bullied by a contingent of Black leaders who never wanted her in the mayor's office to begin with, and whose argument is there's not enough Black people in Seattle city leadership, when Black people are clearly way overrepresented as a percentage of the population? How embarrassing is all of this? So the Seattle Times just came out and said, Chief Barnes is taking the day off. Okay. Again, I have it on good authority. He's already started to clear out his office. He's texting people, yeah, I got fired. They were getting ready last night and talking internally about who the temporary replacement would be. And now it's like, oh, a dozen Black people came up and met with me, and they say that I don't like Black people, and I've got to prove to them that I do. So maybe I'll change my mind. It is so embarrassing. And look, this doesn't, for me, have to do solely with the response to the Sunday mass shooting. And I want to make that very clear. It doesn't have to do solely with the fact that the chief of police was not here. And I think the individual officers responded very well to the shooting itself. It was the communication with the public after the fact. There are two reasons why Chief Sean Barnes needs to go. One of them, and I'll just play the video again, because I think it's important to continue to see the mentality of this man. One of them is the confrontation with reporter Connor Nash of the South Seattle Emerald.
I don't have to tell you where I go. I have a medical procedure I got to do on Friday. No. You need to know this. I have been here working as hard as I can for this city from the day I got here. Do you got that?
There are reports that you are not in town often.
There are reports are wrong. Do you understand?
Let's go.
You understand?
So when
I work.
Let's go.
That is disqualifying. Because it would be disqualifying for any regular officer on the street to have an interaction like that with a member of the media that was captured on camera or with a member of the public. If not termination, they would absolutely have days off in an OPA investigation. And so the fact that the chief of police cannot maintain his composure is disqualifying in and of itself. And then, of course, it's the broader issue of, is he really dedicated to the city of Seattle? He was a hire from outside. Which, look, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But he, you know, never really committed to the city and moved here. He's got an apartment here, but he still has a place in Chicago. And the question was not, why were you gone and didn't predict that this shooting happened? It was like, people say you're gone all the time. This is the second major shooting that he has not been here for. And that was the question that members of the media were trying to drill down, that he just kept dancing around, making jokes about. He would not commit to say how often he's here, how often he's gone. Como News has done great reporting throughout this whole ordeal, by the way. Chris Daniels published a report. They got 4 months worth of Chief Sean Barnes's calendars from the Seattle Police Department. It says the records appear to show Barnes was out of the office and outside the Seattle area nearly a dozen times during those 4 months, including 7 work-related conferences and 4 trips to Chicago where he has family. According to the calendar provided by the chief's office, Barnes traveled to conferences in Detroit, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Dallas, and at least one additional location. Those trips were separate from 4 visits to Chicago. By Como News's count, the travel and other absences reflected in the documents add up to close to 50 days when Barnes was not working from his Seattle office. Some of those dates included weekends or travel days, and the records provided do not necessarily indicate whether Barnes was conducting department business remotely. Out of 4 months, 50 days, he's not in the city that he gets paid $370,000 a year to serve. That is unacceptable. If you want to say you're dedicated to the city of Seattle, you pick up your family and you bring them out here. And you sell your house in Chicago, unless, of course, as the rumors go, what you really want is the job as the Chicago police chief. And you felt like you had to come to Seattle as a stepping stone just so you could eventually abandon it when that opportunity comes along. Well, we don't want, you know, a temporary city dweller. And that's just this asinine thing that the city of Seattle continues to do, is hire these people from the outside to come in and run a department where they've had no skin in the game, where they haven't walked the beat. They don't know the history. It's outrageous. So those are all the reasons that Chief Sean Barnes isn't fit for the job. And the only reason the black community can give that he is the pigmentation of his skin. Oh, well, he's gone 50 days out of 4 months. He berated a reporter and squared up to him like he wanted to punch him in the face and was like shaking with rage. But he's black, so let's keep him on the job. I promise you this, if it's gotta be a black person, because that's all you can do, Katie Wilson, I can give you right now 10 names of other African Americans on the Seattle Police Department or in public safety in the state of Washington who would make a better and a more fitting and a more dedicated chief of police in the city of Seattle. But I'll tell you what, now look, I think Katie Wilson is a dangerous person to have on the seventh floor of City Hall. Like I said, she's listless. She is waiting to see, oh my gosh, what are the blogs going to say? What is the stranger going to say? What are the activists going to say? And whatever they say is what I'll do. And someone without a backbone and someone who actually isn't a leader and can't make decisions on her own merit, that's the most dangerous person to have in a job because you cannot predict what they will do day to day. And that is the situation that we're in the city of Seattle, a city that's already struggling in so many ways. Economically, 37% vacancy rate, huge homeless crisis, huge drug crisis, people moving out like crazy. And so this is already a problem. But if the one decision where she said, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to fire this chief of police, and it only takes 12 black people going up to her office to get her to change her mind on one of the most critical decisions she will probably make as mayor, we've got a problem on our hands. What an incompetent, incompetent woman she is. And I'll get to our subscriber show poll later, but I'm curious whether she even makes it 4 years in the job. I always say the most likely scenario is she gives up. She gives up from the pressure and just says, I've got a family emergency. I've got to resign or something like that. What's happening is absolutely outrageous. So we will see whether she gives in to members of the black community or whether she decides she's going to stick to her guns and her original decision making and put someone else in as the chief of police in the city of Seattle. I've never seen anything like this, you guys. 15 years, I've covered many mayors. Like I said, I covered the sex predator mayor here during the Summer of Love, Chaz Chop, a lot of failed leadership during that period of time. This is in a league of its own. Genuinely embarrassing. I could go out, I could pluck someone off the street, put them in the seventh floor of Seattle City Hall, and they would do a better job than Katie Wilson. Absolutely outrageous. But she was voted into office, so voters get what they voted for. All right, coming up next, huge updates on our story about what happened at the Seattle Storm game, the cussing out of two teenage girls. Really positive updates, I might add. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, moving the hell out of Seattle or Washington State, I don't want you to leave Washington State, but you definitely get out of Seattle, okay? Save yourself. Save your family. Get out of Seattle. But reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are fantastic. And really, their whole marketing apparatus is built for a moment like this when you have a lot of homes going up on the market. And so that means there's competition. There's a lot of different listings. How are you going to make your listing sell out so you can sell your home and get top dollar for it? Well, Wes has something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service. That's all he's focused on, is getting more feet in the door for showings, more offers on the table. And I was chatting with him and he says, look, I know the market's a little weird right now, but you can still get the same results. You just have to put a little bit of effort in. There has to be more strategy there. You can't just put up your half burned down shack in Seattle and get $10 million for it anymore. So he'll walk you through what they offer with the Listing Boost Concierge Service. But I would just start with a market analysis. Just call him up, say, Wes, Brandy told me to call you and ask you what the market is like in my neighborhood and what my expectation can be if I'm planning to sell my home in the next 6 months or so. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. So of course, we have been just, it's been a crazy, 48 hours. So we had this rally for Sophie Cunningham outside Climate Pledge Arena for the Storm Fever game. And then we went inside and we had five teenage girls and myself. I identify as a teenage girl. Do I look like, I'll tell you a different story about that later. But sitting in the front row of the game with their XXXY athletic shirts on, holding signs in support of Sophie Cunningham. Here's an image of two of the girls. One of them you'll recognize, Annalie Wilson, who lost a state track meet to a biological boy. She has a sign up, thank you, Sophie, for speaking up for girls. And then her friend's family doesn't want her friend's name out there, but she's awesome. And I love her too. And I want to give her a lot of love because she was just rock steady during all of this. But they're sitting in these front row seats mid-court. And as you know by now, the co-owner of the Seattle Storm, a woman named Celeste Keaton, comes over and cusses them out. Basically says, you're effing insane. How dare you bring this SHIT in here? I hope God forgives you for what you're doing. So I'm in there. This whole thing went down. Like, I got security. They didn't remove her. It was crazy. And the story blew up. Well, yesterday, the WNBA did issue, or the Seattle Storm, rather, just a kind of vague apology about how the girls were treated. And I said, well, that apology is not enough. And the apology really needs to come from Celeste Keaton to the girls, which hasn't happened yet. However, Fox News reported that the WNBA has confirmed that Seattle Storm co-owner Celeste Keaton has been suspended from attending the next 5 home games at the Seattle Storm and has been fined. They did not disclose how much Celeste Keaton has been fined, but I said that this, I mean, this had to happen because what Celeste Keaton did violates the WNBA's code of conduct for fans. So if you're not going to enforce that code of conduct against a co-owner who was sitting front row next to Sue Bird, then you cannot enforce that code of conduct against any other fan. If you were going to eject a fan that cursed out another fan the next game, I bet they could turn around and sue you and say, well, you didn't do it with this woman. Because I told security, that's her. Go get her. Take her out. And they're like, well, that's the co-owner of the team. We can't do that. So I really don't think that the Seattle Storm had a choice here or that the WNBA had a choice here. And, you know, overall, the atmosphere, there were a lot of disturbing incidents that happened related to our sort of protest and unrelated. I mean, we played the video yesterday of the Fever fan who got spit on by some old lady. I mean, what's with the old white women going at the WNBA games? It's absolutely unhinged. Now, that was great. And I was just celebrating that, you know, something happened to this Celeste Keaton woman, although I still think she ought to apologize to the girls. And I'm going to try to arrange that. But then this was the real piece de resistance. Sophie Cunningham said something. And I really didn't think that she'd wade into it, like wade into the protests kind of on her behalf or the rally or anything like that. But she did. And once again, she's showing why she has more bravery than the entirety of the WNBA. She posted this on X. I truly believe there is a safe space and love for everybody, biological girls, biological boys, trans women, and trans men. Everyone is welcome at my table. You can disagree and still be kind. Bravo to those girls for standing up for what they believe. You'll be hearing from me soon. Yay for gifts. Truly embarrassing of the co-owner. Unfortunately shows the type of leader she is. We love to see that, Sophie. We love to see that. And that just makes me love her so much more. And apparently she's like going to be sending the girls a gift package. So even with all the hate, all the people saying, oh, these girls are anti-trans and this is horrible. And, you know, the booing at the stadium. Sophie's like, still don't care. I said what I said. It's common sense. Thank you to these girls for standing up for what they believe in. I'm going to send you some gifts. And Celeste Keaton is an awful human being, basically, and her behavior is truly embarrassing. And I want to make sure that we bring all this back to, and I've just been inundated with requests about this and, you know, people wanting to talk to the girls and all of this. This is not some abstract fear that these girls have. Again, Annalee Wilson started speaking out about this at 15, she just turned 15 years old. She'd lost a state track meet to a biological boy, decided the first time she ever spoke about it, she was in a room of 500 adults in tears talking about the impact that this had on her. She has never, ever, she is so kind-hearted. She has never made this about the trans athlete. She's made it about the decisions of adults to put everyone in this situation and that it's not fair. And so, you know, rather than have some grace for her, rather than want to understand what she and so many other female athletes have been through, like Callie Keeler, who we've had on the show, who was also sitting front row, you have this love and inclusion side that's saying no hate and then acting like the most hateful bigots on the planet. And they don't see it. And they're still doing it today, even though the storm came out and said, oh, this was wrong. Celeste is getting in trouble. Sophie's standing to her guns. You still have this fringe minority that's like, they're bigots, they're transphobes, they're bigots, they're transphobes. And by the way, the same thing is going to be happening on Friday in Portland. So the Fever are playing in Portland. And so Women Are Real are having a rally, a pro-Sophie rally outside the game. And then there's going to be some people in the game because Sophie Fever is catching on. And I've been in contact with XXXY Athletics, and they're going to be trying to do more things like this at games and give these girls an opportunity to sort of have their message heard. And in the background of all of this, Washington State could become the first state in the nation where voters protect biological girls. And that's why I care about this so much. I mean, look, I am not an athlete. Look at me. Not an athlete. I don't have an athletic bone in my body. Unless you count walking. I'm quite adept at walking. I do love a good walk. What else am I good at?
I thought you were into yoga now. I thought you were good at yoga.
Ping pong. I'm good at ping pong.
Okay.
I can do a little ping pong. I'd at least win in a prison yard. I'm that good at ping pong. But this isn't about like athletics for me. And I know I'm kind of a weird person to be involved in this, but I've been in news for 15 years. And any person who works in news will tell you this. You do a lot of interviews. You interview people on the worst days of their lives. You interview people on the best days of their lives. You do all sorts of memorable interviews. But there are some that just stay with you and that you just can't seem to let go. And that's these girls for me, where it's like, it's not enough just to interview them and tell their story and then walk away. And that's sort of why it's like, I love in this position that we now have where I can get involved. Because after hearing Annalie's story, I was like, I can't walk away now. I've got a massive platform in the state of Washington. We have one of the largest, you know, social media footprints of any show in the state of Washington. And I'm like, what do I use that for? And these girls, you know, whether it's Frances Stout or Annalie Wilson or Callie Keeler, I can't walk away from it. And we need to see this to a conclusion. And the conclusion is in November, voting yes and taking a stand in one of the most liberal places on the planet to say, boys are boys, girls are girls. Truth in biology matters. And we're going to protect girls' sports. So I know there's been a lot of other attention to this issue, but that's what matters to me. What matters to me is getting that initiative past the finish line in November, vote yes on it, so we can move on from this nonsense. So we don't have to have Annalie Wilson front row getting harassed by the co-owner of the Seattle Storm. And then we can move on to other issues because there are so many. We shouldn't have to fight this issue. We shouldn't have to put so much energy into fighting this issue. So let's just get past it. And when the initiative passes in Washington State, that means it can be done in every other blue state in the nation. If we can get it done here, we can get it done anywhere. So yeah, we're going to continue to raise awareness for this issue. I know the girls aren't backing down. And this whole thing on Tuesday went way further than I thought it would. But I think it's just a good reminder about what this is all about. We've been working for several years now, and Let's Go Washington has been working very hard to get this initiative on the ballot and give voters a choice. And let's finally put this to bed. Let's move on. So vote yes in November on all the initiatives. Vote yes to protect girls' sports. Vote yes to restore parental rights and education. And vote yes to repeal the unconstitutional income tax. And then let's move on to other things, okay? Okay, cool. All right, this might be my favorite story of the year. Of all the other ones. I know. Wow. I've said this.
You might have said that a couple times.
But. Yeah, but I'm now those ones aren't anymore. They're, and our yep, next segment that. Is... businesses taking it upon themselves to ban a sex offender from their premises. We'll get to it coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, highly recommend becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, wonderful sponsors of our show now for a couple years. There's a couple reasons to become a member. One, they're really the only advocacy organization looking out for housing providers and landlords in a state where the party in power thinks you're evil, horrible human beings, and they want to steal your property for their own purposes. And that's really not an exaggeration. And so it's a $260 a year membership. They can help you on an individual basis if you've got any questions about screening, forms, laws, etc. And then they're advocating for your interests year-round in Olympia and also at the local level. They're pushing back against some policies in Spokane and Seattle right now, and they've got some key property rights cases. And they hold events all year long that are pretty fun as well. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Look, there are some places where it's like, God, those are my people. Like, those are my people. And it's like, you don't even know them, but you know that they will go to war. Enumclaw, Washington, those are my people. Like, I feel like if I did an all call for Enumclaw, I need you to come help me bury a dead body, I feel like the whole town would show up just because they're down for it. So this is, you know, a horrible story, but what they've done down there is pretty remarkable. So we broke the news about this violent sex predator named Robert Eugene Lau, who got released into the city of Enumclaw, Washington, without any notice. And he's not your regular level 3 sex offender. This guy is as bad as it gets. He has a lifetime of predation. He went to prison because way back in the 80s, in 1986, he was 26 years old. He met a woman at a bar, raped her, stabbed her repeatedly in the vagina, and then threw her in a ditch on the side of the road and left her to die. Thankfully, she survived, but he ended up going to prison for like 3 decades for rape in the first degree and attempted murder. And the thing is, like, that's what he went to prison for. But even before that, he was accused of molesting an underage neighbor. He was accused of molesting his own sister and peeping on her. He was accused of raping an ex-wife. And then even when he went to prison for this attempted murder and rape of just a horrific nature, in prison, he was soliciting the murder of prison guards, which he never was charged with, which is outrageous. I mean, he was putting a bounty on the heads of individual named prison guards and trying to sell those bounties to STGs, which are security threat groups, prison gangs, essentially. And then after he was deemed like so irredeemable that, if you're not familiar with how the law works in Washington state, once you finish your prison sentence, if the state thinks you are like a habitual sexual predator, they can petition to have you civilly committed to a sex offender island. One of the only true amazing things about the criminal justice system in Washington state, where we do so many things wrong, we throw the worst sex offenders on an island. Now, they have constitutional rights still, so they get to petition for their release every year, but he was there for 15 years. He petitioned for his release for the last 6 years. Every single time, a psychologist who basically has the ultimate decision-making said, no, you pose a likely risk of reoffending, and so we're going to keep you on the sex offender island until this past year. And a psychologist from California said, no, even with all that history, I can't tell you that he's more likely to reoffend in a sexually violent nature than not. Even though, while he was on the sex offender island, they found a phone in his possession that had sexually explicit depictions of children. But that's not considered a sexually violent offense. And they never charged him with it because they couldn't, like, 100% prove that the phone was his and that he knew it was on it, essentially. So all of that, and then one day he gets released unconditionally. No conditions. 30 years in prison, 15 years on the predator island, all that history. And they're like, have a nice life, Mr. Lau. And they drop him in the city of Enumclaw. We reported on it. Ultimately, the King County Sheriff's Office did a community virtual meeting and basically said, look, we can't do anything about it. So the city of Enumclaw said, we'll do something about it. So in Enumclaw right now, if you go around to businesses, you might see some signs like this. Warning, no convicted sex predator in our community, with a picture of him. And then these no trespassing signs. This business prohibits the following individuals from entering or remaining on these premises: Robert Lau, convicted violent predator, and Rhonda Nelson, known associate and girlfriend of Robert Lau. She is not permitted on these premises. They are not welcome here. If you see either of these individuals on these premises, call 911 immediately. So not only Robert Lau, but apparently his prison pen pal, who he's now shacking up with in Enumclaw, allegedly, according to these residents. So these posters are all over the place. Our friend Vivian, who goes by ConspiraCookie on social media, she's an independent journalist, she happens to live in Enumclaw. And I remember when we broke the story, she's like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this guy is living near me. And so she's been all about trying to raise awareness for this. So she posted this video about these businesses pushing back.
Enumclaw residents have expressed that they want to support businesses who are banning the convicted rapist and his pen pal slash landlord from their property.
One of the businesses that they're both banned from is Work Sports and Outdoors. In fact, you can go inside and get yourself a free no trespassing flyer for your business or home.
I love the local. They have a warning sign up, so let's see if they need this. So I grabbed a coffee and he has a warning sign here now.
The local.
The El Camino has a no trespassing sign, so you'll be safe from dealing with Robert here. Warning signs are plastered everywhere downtown, by the way. So Griffin Brewing, they have their posters. He will be banned from this location. You're safe at Griffin Brewing. They'll be putting these up as soon as they get more tape. They found tape. Their sign is up. So Griffin Brewing is a safe space from Robert and Rhonda.
I have spent the majority of my day walking around downtown Enumclaw, and I can tell you that these people are banned from almost every business establishment in this entire little town. We're already seeing mass participations and citywide bans against Robert and Rhonda. If more small towns did this, I think America would be in a better place.
That's good stuff right there. Oh my gosh. First of all, I love Vivian, but that's what you have to do. The government ain't going to tell you. The government ain't going to help you. And so what do you do? I mean, I think, you know, when they asked on this community meeting, there were community members who were asking the King County Sheriff's Office, is there anything we can do to reverse course on this to get him back to the Predator Island? And they said, no, absent, you know, an additional criminal offense, we can't do anything about this. This decision is this decision. But if you're living in a city and your picture is up and your girlfriend's picture is up on nearly every business and you can't get coffee and you can't get a beer and you can't go into stores, are you going to live in that city for very long? I don't think so. Now, unfortunately, that will mean that he'll probably be thrust upon another unsuspecting community, but you can do the same thing. And I don't blame a single one of them. And as Vivian was pointing out, that's actually an indicator to families who are concerned that you're safe here because he can't be here. I will say, though, I'm worried about Vivian's safety because he has obviously a very violent history with women, and she has been at the forefront of trying to alert the community to his presence. So, I mean, you know, this is what it is. I mean, all the government did is they sent out a little flyer, and on the back of it, it said, if you're a parent, you should make sure you keep your child's fingerprints on file just in case this guy, you know, kidnaps or murders them. And then during the meeting, they said, yeah, he really likes knives, so I would be a wary of a potential knife attack. It's like, wow, gee, thanks. And at the same time, we have a government that's trying to strip people of their Second Amendment rights so they can't defend themselves against someone like Robert Eugene Lau. Absolutely insane, but the city of Enumclaw, you don't mess with the claw. You do not mess with the claw, because the claw will come for you. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. We need to visit the claw. It's been a while since we've been down to the claw. Da, 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 da. All right, so I actually was just having dinner with some friends, and they have a daughter who's about to head off to college. And in fact, they're getting ready to move to Arizona. Where she's going to college. And so we were talking about, you know, going from Washington to Arizona and how, gosh, you know, it'll probably be not just like a political shock, but I think maybe for, they have also a kid who's a little bit younger who'll be transferring high schools. Like I think, I said, I think you'll notice the difference between what's pushed on kids in schools here versus there. And maybe that'll be a nice break from it. But you cannot think that your kids are safe from the indoctrination once they leave high school. because it is absolutely happening in colleges as well. And Georgetown University is a good example of this. So they are offering a bunch of resources to LGBTQ students. And I will say, I think we're going to start to see a lot more of this in colleges. I mean, there's been indoctrination in colleges, but I think it's a little bit more like less trans focused and more sort of worldview focused. But this trans generation, the generation of kids that sort of fell into this social contagion, they are, you know, heading to college. They are about this age. And so you're going to see this influx. So this is from Georgetown University's website. Welcome to the LGBTQ Resource Center. It supports Georgetown through resources, outreach, advocacy, and programming designed to aid students throughout their journey at Georgetown and beyond. It's among the first such centers of its kind at a Catholic Jesuit institution in the country. We embrace and celebrate the rich diversity and intersectionality that exists among our Georgetown community and strive to uphold the values that allow all students to flourish at Georgetown and beyond. Okay, so let's see what sort of stuff that they are offering to students. And this is particularly, I think, troubling in the sense that, you know, when you're in college, there's more of a separation between you and your family. So there's less of an opportunity for your family to know that this sort of stuff is going on. I mean, a lot of high schools in Washington State, for instance, they offer this sort of stuff, but at least the kid is still living under their parents' roof. And so they might know, you know, what kind of things that they're getting into or if they're getting into medicalization. But it's also a reality that these kids are 18, so they don't have to tell their parents about this stuff. So gender-affirming care and resources, it says they have a student health center. According to their page, the student health center is not able to offer gender-affirming care. However, they can direct you to preferred providers in the area. So they have a little link that basically says, hey, we can't give you that sex reassignment surgery, but we'll get you to somewhere that can. Health insurance coverage. They also talk about health insurance coverage, what can be used for gender care, et cetera, et cetera. But this is one of the really interesting things. Free binders. No, 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 not a three-ring binder. Not a three-ring binder. You got to buy one of those on your own at Target. Free chest binders. Several D.C. area organizations provide free binders to those who need them. Please find links to these organizations below. Ah, yes. When young women are finally filling out, you're just going to bind their chests to try to make them appear flatter. It's absolutely disgusting and insane. And then they have a queer support space and trans and non-binary support space, which I would argue that so many of these institutions are just in and of themselves support spaces for queer, trans, and non-binary, and it's the cisgender students that really need some sort of safe support space. All right, what else they got? Some more resources, including how to change your name. Yes, because no parent wants anything more than your child leaving with the name you gave them at birth, only to come home with a different one. Fantastic. Let's see, gender-inclusive housing and restroom access, changing your name across campus, adding your pronouns across campus, gender-affirming care resources, and non-discrimination protections. So basically, they'll just help you. You can go home a whole new person.
Yeah, and this closet. So they literally will give you the opposite gender clothes. If you came to school with all of your female clothes and you want to be a boy, they'll give you all of your clothes.
Yep. You can go to college Betty Sue. And then you can come home, Lou. And
yeah, you, so you don't can need your parents' your money for a new wardrobe.
Guys, just outrageous.
It's crazy.
So yeah, I mean, the indoctrination's not done when your child leaves home. It only just begins. So make sure you scour the website of the university that your child is going to see if they've got anything like this and have a good old conversation with your child about why binding their chest is probably not a great idea.
Betty Sue.
Betty Sue.
I'm looking forward to I was when looking you name for a child.
I was looking for a rhyme, okay?
Got it.
Why are you going to hate on me all the time? I'm trying my very best on very little sleep,
hey,
okay?
Hey, make a comeback. They're all making comebacks.
I think Betty Sue's a nice name. I think yeah. That's perfectly fine. And if that's your name, I love it. Nicole doesn't, obviously, but that's fine. All right, coming up next, we'll get to some national news. Oh, we're just going to continue with the crazy. Did you put this in here because I sent it to you on Instagram?
Yes.
Okay, great. I love that. All right, coming up next in national, but first, a lot of investors right now focused on AI, crypto tech, what's happening in the energy sector, obviously, with gas prices, et cetera. Our friend Zach Abraham is the guy you want to go to figure out how all those things could be impacting your retirement portfolio. portfolio, and I just would look at it as a second opinion. Zach is my money manager. He's Nicole's money manager. He's my mother's money manager. And really, I just like how straightforward he is about what's happening and how he's able to look past sort of maybe his own political biases. You know, he comes on our show for Swamp Watch, and certainly he's aligned with me politically, but that doesn't mean that he can't see things that President Trump might be doing, for instance, that could impact your retirement portfolio, and approach that honestly. So Bulwark Capital's focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, to give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? Doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, and on all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast. Okay. Let's get to some national news. And Miranda's not here today, but I am going to do my best at Florida Report, and maybe Nicole can help me. Okay. So a Minnesota Democrat is in hot water for sending sexually inappropriate messages to staffers. So St. Paul Pioneer Press has this. St. Paul Mayor Kaholi Herr is under investigation for sexual harassment after a complaint alleges she sent a Wiener Wednesday text message. Happy Wiener Wednesday. Wish I was having wieners with all of you at 6 today. When she wraps you up in a blanket after you gave her a good wienering. What is under the redacted thing? What is under that?
I'm told... Some people have reported that it's a face of a man.
A face of a man. So she's talking about getting a good wienering when she wraps you up in her blanket after you gave her a good wienering. Can you see that picture of that woman again? She's talking about a good wienering. What have we got Fauci for?
Sorry.
I said wiener. You went with Fauci.
Well, I know it's kind of fitting.
St. Paul Police Chief Axel Henry, who filed the complaint, sent this to the city attorney. He said, the city is on notice that Mayor Herr has engaged in illegal conduct towards city employees. Litigation is reasonably foreseeable. You are also aware that Mayor Herr has used one or more mobile phones to communicate inappropriate and indeed unlawful text messages. For example, Mayor Herr sent the following text messages to a city employee. And then they had that screenshot on the Happy Wiener Wednesday and a good wienering. Now, I don't know. There's got to be some sort of inside joke. Like, do they have hot dogs every Wednesday at the office? I think it's... Well, I don't. It seems like maybe there's some sort of hot dog gathering.
I think she just might be an inappropriate texter. She thinks it's funny, I'm sure.
The good wienering, the comments I saw an Instagram post, the comments were hilarious. You know when you see a good Insta post and you immediately like comments and they just don't let you down? This was one of them. There were girls like, I don't know, I talk to my coworkers about needing a good wienering often. I'm just like, oh my God.
What's up with mayors?
I don't know. I don't know. We have a real low bar for mayors, bar.
They need to start taking classes or something. We're just putting these people into these high level positions
to be fair, how I send you way more inappropriate stuff than that.
Yeah. And you're not the mayor.
That's true. But you are technically an employee.
Sure.
So if you wanted to sue me, I think that there'd be a lot of grounds for
good point.
Sexual something lawsuits. Racism, homophobia, harassment, whatever it is. All right. Do you have a Florida report open, or are we just going to like freewheel it? Miranda's not here. I can't say where she is, though, because it's top secret. Oh. I think for a couple more days. And she's like, I can't say
it. You know what? I forgot.
It's fine.
Let's try it. Let's go.
Okay.
It's not even controversial anymore. Controversial.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Good job, Nicole. Yeah, we could try that. That was great. All right. So Miranda sent us some Florida report stories. Of course, we talked about Anthony Fauci pleading the fifth 111 times, including when asked about the color of his tie, the color of the carpet, and some other things. So that was depressing. I mean, I honestly, it's hard not to watch that and not be filled with rage for all the lives that were destroyed based on that man. But one of the things that I was saying on the whole, because Senator Josh Hawley was saying, well, you can't really plead the fifth because you can only plead the fifth to protect yourself against self-incrimination that could lead to prosecution. And you've been given a blanket pardon by Joe Biden. But I did say on the show yesterday, but I don't think he's, I mean, the pardon does not protect him from state charges. So if there were governors who wanted to try to hold Anthony Fauci accountable for any of the lies that he knowingly told during the pandemic and then journaled other things, they could do that. And didn't I even say Florida?
Yes.
You know what?
I believe so.
I think the Florida AG probably watches our show, or I think that this was just common sense and it was, of course, going to be Florida that did it first. So this from Politico: Florida Attorney General launches probe into Fauci over COVID claims. So he says that it says the Trump era COVID czar pushed for pandemic safety requirements such as face mask use and social distancing that drew criticism from Republican lawmakers, particularly in Florida, and prompted dozens of appearances before congressional committees where he was accused of misleading the public. And so I guess they're going to look into whether there's any sort of state charges. And we said yesterday, I'm trying to figure out what those would be exactly in terms of like what is the actual criminal charge for like making a horrible suggestion or lying about it publicly, because he couldn't force the states to do anything, right? He could suggest, like he did to Gavin Newsom, to close the schools, or like he did to Jay Inslee, according to his diary, to go into these severe lockdowns. But ultimately, it was up to them to make the decision. So I think it'll come down to whether the CDC, because of what he directed, did anything that ultimately impacted the states. So Ron DeSantis, Governor Ron DeSantis, was on Jesse Waters' show, and he was talking about how proud he was to have been named in Fauci's diary, and Fauci have been critical about what a horrible job he was doing.
A pandemic is like the Super Bowl for somebody involved in infectious diseases and public health. And yet he was wrong about lockdowns. He was wrong about masks. He was wrong about school closures. He made up the 6-foot social distancing. He was wrong about demanding restaurants be closed. And so this is the Super Bowl. This is what you live for in that field. And he was wrong about all those things. And I know that firsthand because I was clashing with him on all of those issues in those early months of COVID. He would come down to Florida and do TV hits on local news attacking me for mandating that schools be open, for allowing restaurants to function and all this other stuff. And he would even host conference calls with mayors and counties as a way to circumvent our policies and to impose mandates, and we blocked it. And there was one of the most proud things that I can say since I've been governor is reading the diary entry, you know, where he was attacking me for blocking local mask mandates that he was trying to engineer around our back.
Yeah, Ron DeSantis called it a badge of honor. If I were him, I would print out that passage in the diary and I would frame it in my office. I agree. Now, DeSantis is an attorney, and he did talk about on Jesse Waters, as I was alluding to, why it would be difficult for state charges against Fauci to go anywhere.
I think he's probably the most destructive bureaucrat in the history of the United States of America.
I'd take that bet. Do you think he has criminal exposure federally and state charges?
So I definitely think he should be held in contempt. Now, on the state, the Attorney General of Florida has an investigation into Fauci. I would love to see something happen there. The reality is a federal official has a lot of defenses to go if they're dragged into state court. And in fact, he could probably remove it to federal court. So we'll see how that plays out. I hope that there's accountability. I wish that it had happened sooner, because I think that a lot of the things we've seen in those diaries, it validated what a lot of us already knew for many years.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's a lot of people who will never be made whole, and they'll never get so-called justice. I mean, I still hear from people who are trying to rebuild their lives after losing their careers during the pandemic, you know, many of them police officers and firefighters. And that's just heartbreaking. People who had to move out of the state to try to find new work, you know, people who never got to say a proper goodbye to their loved ones. How do you make that right? Not even sending Fauci to prison would make that right, although it might feel really good. But I also blame people like Jay Inslee and, you know, the vaccine mandates that he never really acknowledged shouldn't have been done in the first place. And frankly, the vilification that a lot of people endured from their friends and family and their neighbors for saying things that turned out to be true, for being called and labeled conspiracy theorists only to now be proven correct. So, you know, maybe just knowing that you were right will be helpful or will be a little bit of relief from what you endured. All right, we'll get to our subscriber poll and comments for the live stream coming up next. First, do you need to save money? Yeah, who doesn't want to save some money and spend it on literally anything else except bills and the cost of living? I recommend taking the First Mark Challenge with our friends at First Mark Insurance, because we hear back after folks take the First Mark Challenge to have the company reevaluate their insurance that they're usually saving about $100 a month. You guys, that's $1,200 a year. You know how many Mai Tais I could buy during a beach vacation for $1,200? Or whatever else you feel like you need to spend it on. But that's like $20,000 over 20 years. Mike and I saved $2,000 on our renewal with First Mark this year. And it's just really one of the best decisions we've made, because it has also taken all the stress and uncertainty out of the insurance process. We don't handle anything on our own. They do it all proactively. And so the First Mark Challenge is free. All it entails is you stop putting it off. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com, schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. 11,000 Washington families have taken the First Mark Challenge. And then they'll talk to you, go over your current insurance, learn a little bit about your family and your insurance needs. They'll go out, do all the hard work, come back with their recommendations. And yes, they might say, hey, we actually can't find you better insurance. And they have said that to Undivided viewers and listeners. That's the sign of an honest company that is willing to turn your business away because that's what's best for you and your family. Or they might say, great news, we can save you a bunch of money, and they can handle your personal insurance and your business insurance. I use them for both my home and my business. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. And then when you need them, you pick up the phone and you don't get someone in Timbuktu or India. You get someone in Washington State who picks up the phone and talks to you like a human being. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, a huge thank you to our paid subscribers who make the show possible. Will Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson serve her entire first term? Nicole, what do you think? Is she going to make it? Keep in mind, we are 7 months in.
I know, it's early.
It's early, and this has been pretty rough.
Yeah, I don't think she looks like she's having fun, that's for sure. No. So at some point, I could see her saying, oh, you know what, my daughter, just want to spend more time with her.
Making some sort of excuse.
I don't think so.
I don't think she makes it either. I do not believe that she will serve her entire... Now, whether that's going to be a recall or she's going to give up, I can't tell you for sure, but I don't see her being able to take this pressure as someone who's never had a job for another 4 years. That just doesn't seem likely. Let's see. Some disagree. Well, 30% of people say, yes, I think she will. 70% say no. Let's see. Mama with Boys says, I certainly hope she won't. It's been a disaster. James Bambury, sadly, I think we will have to suffer not only her full term, but then a second. No. James.
I don't think
although,
so.
Although, you know, I'm frequently underestimating the absurdity of Seattle voters, but says this is because the voters of Seattle are so ideologically captured and driven that they will just keep electing her or someone like her. Yeah, and it is always the devil you don't know. And the truth is, even if she gets rid of Sean Barnes and stays true to that decision she made last night, you still have a socialist mayor who gets to choose the next chief of police. And that is a scary proposition. You guys are a little more divided over on Locals, 50-50. Monkey C says, I'm hoping she does not finish her term. I'm hoping that the series of problems and issues that continue to occur will force the mayor out of office. It is funny that Seattleites are getting exactly what they voted for. And I was talking to someone last night who said, no, she needs to finish her term because Seattle needs to get what it voted for good and hard and take the full dose of medicine of socialism, is what they said. All right, Matthew Cook, recalls are so hard, but yes, if anyone is capable of being so incompetent to buck the trend, it's her. Because we've had, like, five in a row? No, because some of them were just partial fill-in mayors, but we had, like, one-term mayors, and we have this pattern of it, and they always lose re-election. So Seattle voters are a little bit wishy-washy, but a lot of them have been incompetent. And with Ed Murray, it was because he was accused of sexual misconduct, and so he didn't run for a second term. Jenny Durkin didn't run for a second term. Bruce Harrell ran for a second term and didn't win.
I think part of the issue is that all these people, well, they haven't figured out that they can't please everyone.
Yes.
And they are on this mission to please everyone, and it will never happen.
It'll never work. And people want
I think Harrell is the same problem.
100%.
He kept trying to please people. Stop trying to please everybody and like focus on one big group and you might make it.
Or for, focus on, I don't know, doing a good job. And then if they reelect you, great. If they don't, then okay. Well,
and that is to the same group, because most people in Seattle just want to be, feel safe, be, you know, send their kids to school, work, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just like, just focus on those people and not the crazies that show up every day at your office.
Talon on X says yes, because she's a radical ideologue guided by strictly by her activism. Seattle also voted for this with the organized leftists that are organized in their voting. The so-called Seattle moderates fading quickly. Don't get involved. All right, let's get to some other comments from the live stream. On the WNBA suspending the Storm co-owner for yelling at the girls, Leland Taylor said, oh, $20. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Brandy, spring for 1,000 XXXY shirts and hand them out at the doors of the Portland game. Spread the message. So I'm not actually going down to the Portland game. I won't be there for that rally. But I do know that I am sending our friend Ari, not Ari Hoffman, the other Ari, the detransitioner, down with a bunch of XXXY shirts that Jennifer Say, who owns the brand, sent. And so there will be, for people going into the game down there, some cool shirts like this one.
Cool, cool.
Save Women Short Sports.
From Brian, great to see you. Another $9.99 super chat, but great to see you at the
Why are you
Soapy Rally.
That's from Brian.
Well, at the end, he's signing his name, okay. Brian.
Sorry. I was like, you have something I don't know.
Great to see you at the Soapy Rally, Brandy. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Papa Woody, nice shirt, Brandy. Common sense looks good on you. You know, like I said, after I got rid of my TDS, I did start getting more attractive.
From Mary, that's awesome that she's getting suspended. The owner / co-owner does not care about how she treats her fans.
Yeah, outrageous. Weiss Castle, Seattle Storm punishes the owner, but who is owning up to why anti-initiative political messaging was allowed? And I do know that there is going to be a PDC complaint filed about the fact that the Storm allowed in these political signs and encouraged them in and put them on the Jumbotron. So TBD on that. I'm not filing the complaint, but I've heard somebody else is.
From Necro Two Shoes, the violent vocal minority is starting to lose their grip. Like the snakes they are, they'll strike. So be careful.
Yeah, when you lose your grip, you act out. Mm-hmm. So, and by the way, I teased at the end of the show yesterday that I had a show or a story I was going to lead the show with today. Mm-hmm. It's kind of about the left-wing fringe, but all this other stuff happened. So I'm going to save it till Monday. It'll be just fine. All right. On the Enumclaw, business is banning the sex predator, Nancy Campbell, $4.99 super chat, tape fund for Enumclaw. I love the little part in the video where Vivian's like, they're going to hang these up when they get more tape. And then she goes back.
They got more tape.
Tape's expensive, man.
It is. And it's just one of those things that gets lost all the time.
It's true.
Nanook of the North, why this sex pred is allowed out of jail after all he has done to prove he's a danger to society is mind boggling.
Yeah. Unfortunate. Watermelon Shug, good, because you're never truly out of options. Get creative and keep fighting back. Yeah. And that is, it's like, no, we're not going to just live with the fact that this guy's now in our community. We'll make it so uncomfortable that he can't be anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
From It's Joe, how long until we see videos of people defending him and ripping those posters down?
It'll be white, middle-aged women,
yeah,
for sure.
For sure. And I have heard, I've been told also that the reservation over there is not allowing him on their property on their land at all. So he can drive through on the main road, but that's it. So no
what's
getting
the,
gas.
What's the tribe?
It's the Muckleshoot.
Yeah, so apparently the Muckleshoot, we've
is
heard,
working on it.
That they're trying to ban him from driving on their land, which is...
He can drive on the public road, so that they have to let him, but he can't pull off or he's in trouble. But yeah, so that will be interesting.
Man, I love that.
So yeah, I've reached out to them. I think they're working on it.
Yeah, Georgetown University offering free binders to students, chess binders. Matt says, hot take, in college you're an adult, and if you want to make these choices, then that is your choice, even if you're a brainwashed. Hey, I agree. I just think parents ought to know what's going on. And technically, when I went to college, I just turned 18, I guess. But yeah, parents should know you might be sending your child off. And if parents are paying for that college, they have a right to do some investigating as to what's being offered to their child there.
Right. From Anthony Cochran, sounds like Evergreen State College. I used to live right across from the campus, and you could always tell the freshmen because they looked normal.
They still looked normal. Yeah.
And then as they go, they get crazy.
So I made a joke at the beginning of the show, and I'll tell you the story behind it. So I was with these teen girls at the game, and I was with Riley, who's 18, and she goes this offhand comment. She's like, oh, I wonder how many people thought we were mother-daughter today. And I was why would you do that? Why would you say that? And I'm 38, so technically I could be your mom. But I really was like, no, I look cute. I look young. So I took a picture of us we took at the game, and I put it into Grok. And I said, Grok, how old are the people in this picture? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's Grok's going to have my back.
Oh, yeah.
Nope. It said she looked, it said, oh, the woman on the left looks 18 to 22, which was
correct.
Know, correct. Mm-hmm. And about, oh, their skin is very smooth and all this stuff. Oh, no.
It tells you why.
Should I read it? Hold on.
Yeah.
We have time. Let me read this before I get to our closing sanity check, because this made me so depressed.
Wow, Grok's mean.
Grok is mean. Hold on. Look, stop. Stop. Hold on. Okay,
I got it. What was
Okay. Left woman holding the sign. That was me. Mid to late 30s, roughly 35 to 42. Mm. I'm 38. I understand it's correct, but I was thinking I look young today. They're going to say 28. She has mature facial structure, defined cheekbones, and adult proportions. Okay. Right woman, late teens to early 20s, roughly 17 to 22. She has a more youthful face, smoother skin, and a slimmer build.
Wow.
Grok. I was like, that is hurtful, but also accurate. So congratulations, Grok.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, that AI stuff is real crazy.
I know it is. All right, Nicole, thank you so much. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. So U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, along with Veteran Affairs Secretary, Acting Labor Secretary, President Trump, they hosted veterans at the White House to kick off the Freedom Haulers campaign. So, you know, we've been dealing with this whole CDL issue with illegal aliens. So they're like, no CDLs for the illegals. But we are going to fast track a program that would help veterans get CDLs more quickly.
And thank you all for being here as we take action to get illegal alien truck drivers off the American roadways. We're doing a very strong movement, and we have had such support for this, and replace them with proud American veterans.
Proud American veterans, because, I mean, if you're the illegal aliens, we're driving trucks, and we do need commerce to continue in the United States. So how do we make up for the illegal aliens who can't have the CDLs? We're going to try to fast track jobs for veterans. I love that. Here's what freedomhaulers.com looks like.
It's actually freedomhaulers.dot.com.
Oh, that's confusing.
I know.
New mission, same dedication. I think Trump's been obsessed with trucks since he got to drive a garbage
truck.
Yes,
I believe that's correct. Like,
he's going to be done with his second term. And then he's going to, oh, that's cool. It's like a Humvee that turns into a truck, like a transformer. I mean, I know that it's AI or whatever, but I still think that's cool. He's going to get done with his second term in the White House, and then he's going to go drive garbage trucks for a living or work at McDonald's because he loved it so much.
Why not?
All right. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been a week of live episodes. We will have an episode of Sundays with Subscribers for paid subscribers this week. We're going to be talking to a former Seattle gang detective about what the hell is going on with these young black men shooting each other and what actually needs to be done to solve the problem. So I look forward to that conversation. If you'd like to support our show, that's how the show is possible, with paid subscribers who pay $5 of their hard-earned money every month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. You just click on that little banner right there. It says support the show. And then, you know, you'll join our growing community of sane people who are trying to rescue not only Seattle and Washington, but the entire West Coast and ultimately the country. Think big, right? Think big. Subscribers, we'll see you Sunday. The rest of you, we will see you Monday back here on the live show at noon. Set a reminder, and I will see you all on Sean Hannity tonight, where I'll be talking about the fight to protect women's sports. Toodaloo.